This is the Steve Cochran Show.
There is no doubt whatsoever that these officers were intentionally targeted and assassinated. It was a calculated act against those who work to protect this community every single day.
The men and women responding to this scene yesterday are heroes, just like the men and women that put on a uniform each morning and each night. They are everyday heroes. And I ask this community to continue to pray for peace. We will get through this. Baton Rouge is better than this.
Eddie Johnson, the new superintendent of police for your Chicago Police Department, is welcome on the show anytime. And we look forward to talking to him. In a moment, we anticipate having Gary McCarthy join us, former police superintendent. And, you know, I would encourage you to do the same thing that I've asked you to do before when it comes to our fighting men and women and overseas and here at home. You know, thank a cop.
They had a press conference yesterday for a couple of police officers. One was a female police officer who saved a life, a little boy's life, over the weekend. And it was really cool. And watching the news conference, people were lining up to say thank you and to congratulate her, too. But it was nice to do a nice news conference as opposed to a lot of the news conferences that we have to cover these days.
I think it's one of those things, and we can ask Gary McCarthy this, but I think as a cop, you know, it's maybe a pleasant surprise if somebody takes the time to say thank you for the work that you do. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Good morning. How you doing, Steve? Hi, Mary.
And don't forget Andrea. She's right there.
Hey, Superintendent.
Oh, hey. How are you?
Good to talk to you.
Nice to connect with you again. We'll get to all that in a moment. But I would assume cops don't mind if somebody comes up and says thank you, do they?
No, we like it, actually. People do it more frequently than you might imagine based upon what you hear in the press.
I don't know if you've seen much of the photos and viral videos and stuff that have come up since Dallas and Baton Rouge, but nothing makes me smile more than when you see these videos pop up, and it's a Black Lives Matter rally, and it turns out to be a barbecue with cops and protesters, or there's a dancing cop, I think, in Ohio as well that was dancing with some of the protesters. It's not that hard for everybody to get along, is it?
It depends. I've one of my frustrations right now, besides not being involved in what's happening, 35 years in this profession, and it's the worst crisis that my profession has ever suffered. And I thought I was going to be one of the thought leaders that was going to help take policing through what was going on here. And that's absolutely killing me. It harkens me back. My brother was a New York State trooper who retired right before 9/11, and when I spoke to him a couple of days later, because I didn't get to speak to too many people at that point, he was just devastated by not being able to do something about it, you know?
Sure.
And I kind of feel the same way, but it depends on who you're speaking with. Some people you just can't reach. I'm starting to figure that out. I actually was in a town hall meeting with Don Lemon the other night on CNN,
yep.
And I made the offer right there to put national leadership for law enforcement in the room with leadership, if there is such a thing, by the way, with Black Lives Matter. And it was not overtly acknowledged or accepted, but afterwards it was made clear to me that people were interested. So I went out the next day and I started making phone calls to all my friends in law enforcement. And I was told roundly by individuals who were in the meeting that the president hosted last week,
right,
that the same offer was made right there by the president, and it was flatly turned down by Black Lives Matter, saying, you know, we don't want to meet with them. We have an agenda, and we're going to pursue it.
But I don't get the impression that it's a cohesive agenda. You know, this Black Lives Matter thing that I see factions of Black Lives Matter around the country that, you know, they're getting along with the cops, and they want to be able to protest and exit, you know, and be able to do that, their constitutional right. I don't understand the vigilance of some portions of it. Do you?
No, I don't. And it's not even vigilance. It's the okay, you've got our attention. let's sit down and try and figure this thing out.
Yeah, why wouldn't you do that?
And the response is no. Because I can't answer that. I can't answer that. It makes no sense. But, you know, unfortunately, what I've been seeing, and maybe I'm just more sensitive to it, and even while I was still there near the end of November and dealing with the protests on Michigan Avenue, one of the things that was a sea change in my mind that's really troubling to me is the fact that you heard me for years, going back to the NATO protests, talking about the fact that we would defend people's right to free speech
right. And
be intolerant of criminal behavior. Well, we stopped delivering on the intolerant criminal behavior because we would arrest people who assaulted cops, and we had pictures of it, and we would not get them prosecuted in Cook County. They were non-processed and released. Now, you can't have it both ways. And what's happening here, and I've been talking about this a lot because it's very clear to me, is that we have fostered a culture of noncompliance with the police now. And this has been fostered by, I blame elected officials and the political climate that is simply not coming up with a plan and simply reacting politically to movements like Black Lives Matter. Now, obviously, the police can do better. We have to do better. We've made some terrible mistakes. Where those mistakes happen, people need to be held accountable and prosecuted under the same constitution that anybody else who is accused of a crime gets prosecuted under.
Right.
So we're looking for a double standard here, but at the end of the day, we're creating lawlessness in this country. And what we've seen with the assassination of these police officers is a natural outgrowth of that erosion. That starts with the fact that people are telling individuals, young people, not only to not comply with the police, but to actively resist the police.
Yeah, and it can't work that way in a civilized society. Give me 30 seconds to get a traffic update in here, and then more with Gary McCarthy, former Chicago police superintendent. Talking with Gary McCarthy, former CPD super, and nice to have you on the show again. All right, so listen, there's a media culpability to this as well, the rush to report a story as if we have all the facts as soon as they come out. I've never seen the foot race to put uncensored video on the air without telling the full story. And all of that just inflames everybody, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And any video that is released is released at least with the inference of wrongdoing by police.
Right.
If not the overt comment that, you know, another bad police video. So, absolutely. Look, there's plenty of accountability to go around, but it seems as though I don't hear the word accountability except when we're talking about the police. We're not talking about... I'm curious, where are the elected officials now? What are they doing? Because they're not... I don't hear anybody coming up with a plan. Where are the community activists who have been fostering this sentiment in the community that's leading to the fact that police officers are now under attack?
Well, I'll tell you right now, I would like to hear, and I said this on the air as well, I'd like to hear anger from the president. I'd like to hear anger from Mayor Emanuel, because you need to be angry about the fact that cops are in danger. This is what we talked about yesterday, too. You know, a cop is sworn to protect the guy that spits in his face, who's standing next to the guy that shakes his hand and says thank you equally. That's right. What cops do every single day. And while you try to get rid of every bad cop and every racist cop in the meantime, well, the cops are doing that. What are the elected officials doing? We're in the middle of 2 weeks worth of conventions there. You know, it's great to stand up and say, hey, we got to be better to our cops. Well, what does that accomplish? Nothing.
No, absolutely. And what we get are value statements. That's what's driving me crazy. You know, when we have some sort of crisis, we need a plan. You know, 2 weeks ago, after the officers got shot in Dallas, I happened to be on a news show, and we were just about to go live, and they interrupted me. They said, the Attorney General is coming on, so we're going to kick to that, and then we're going to come back. The Attorney General of the United States, the lead law enforcement person in the country, got up and gave a political speech with value statements. And as soon as she finished, I said, how about a plan? There's nobody taking charge of what's happening. There's a one-way conversation about law enforcement without law enforcement. Law enforcement is not involved in this conversation. I can give you a plan. Any law enforcement leader in this country can give you a plan, but nobody wants to do that. What they want to do is they want to react to individual incidents, tie them all together, and just throw it at the wall. There were 3,000 people shot in Chicago last year. There's obviously going to be a lot more this year. We might hit 400 murders by the end of July. At the end of the day, there were 19 police-related shootings last year in this city,
right?
Which was at almost a 70% reduction from when I got here in 2011.
And that's cops called to every incident, obviously. That's cops who report to every incident. And I go back to what happened in Minneapolis. In Minneapolis, there's a protocol that a cop has if somebody says they have a gun in the car. And Gary McCarthy, correct me if I'm wrong, but when a cop tells you, put your hands out of the car, he opens the door, you get out of the car, and he disarms you, you do it. You don't reach for the gun that you tell him you have.
When I get pulled over by the police, and I had to describe this to somebody recently. First of all, I get nervous. Second of all, I keep my hands on the wheel. I tell them that, I haven't been pulled over since I'm retired, but I tell them that I'm on the job. I tell them that I'm carrying a weapon. I do all the things that I'm telling people that they should be doing in interactions with the police. So I don't even know what to say anymore, except for the fact that I'm waiting for a plan. Somebody's got to take control, because unless everybody thinks that what we're doing is good, if this is democracy in action and we're getting somewhere, let's keep doing it.
I don't think good's part of the conversation. Before we jump to what's happening in this city and what you're doing now, I'm concerned, too, about the fact that these last two shooters are ex-Marines. And I say ex-Marines because they lost their ability to be called Marines when they committed the felonies. And these murders.
I like the way you think, yeah.
But these two men come out of the service in some form of damage. And I think and this is the other thing, Gary, that I don't understand. Why hasn't the Pentagon stepped up and said immediately, like now, right after Dallas and certainly right after Baton Rouge, we know these were Marines. We're looking at the problem of PTSD more so than ever. We're going to get after it. We're going to get after it in ways we never have. I haven't heard a word.
Yeah, agreed. Well, like I said, this plenty of accountability to go around, but apparently the only accountability goes to the police at this point. That's all I'm hearing. And it's really frustrating, and you're absolutely right. Growing up with a World War II Marine who suffered severely from PTSD, I understand that, you know, it's a big issue.
You were talking a few moments ago, both of you, about creating more rage. Can you, and I know there needs to be police accountability, I completely understand that, but from your point of view, Gary, explain IPRA's decision to make all of these videos public. Why do that? Does that not incite more rage, or do you think that'll create calm?
No, it's kowtowing. It's political pandering. That's what's happening. You know, because of the political environment in this country, because of the fact that you're either on the bus or under the bus, politicians across the country, elected officials, very simply do what they think is politically correct. And they think it's politically correct to release videos. Well, we do not release the evidence in murder trials,
right,
in murder investigations. We do that for a reason, to protect the integrity of the case. If the police are going to be handled differently, okay, let's make that decision. But don't unilaterally just do what people are suggesting. Look, if you listen to communities in this country, they want civilian oversight of police departments. Well, we've got that here in Chicago. We've got the police board. If you listen to the same communities, they'll tell you that they want outside agencies conducting investigations into police uses of force. Well, we have that here in Chicago. We have IPRA. The other thing that everybody wants is that they always want a federal investigation. Well, in the Laquan McDonald case, we got one. IPRA went right to the FBI, who went right to the U.S. attorney, who impaneled a grand jury, which still has not concluded. Nobody has noticed that. So you've got the oversight, you've got the outside investigations, you've got the federal investigation, but when you don't like the results, what happens? Everybody goes crazy. And suddenly, the next thing you know, I'm out of a job.
Yeah, you left us quickly.
Where I had no authority to do anything but put that officer on desk duty.
What are you doing now? Are you still active in law enforcement, and what's next for you?
Well, I'm staying in touch with my friends in law enforcement. I'm obviously doing a lot of speaking about law enforcement. But as far as professionally, I started my own company. It's a security and consulting company. And I'm out working, bidding on contracts and trying to make some money. I mean, I'm having a lot less stress. Everybody tells me they've never seen me this relaxed. And my response is always simple, because I've never been this this relaxed.
Right, but relaxed, relaxed is not what you do well either, though, I'm sure.
No, not good at it.
Listen, I'm glad we reconnected, and I'm sorry about the circumstances you left under. And I'm, you know, I don't know if you remember the day specifically, but the day, I mean, you left this show and you went into that meeting and got blindsided, and you were scapegoated. That's not just my opinion; that's the opinion of many. But I'm glad you're speaking out. I hope you continue to do it, and you're always welcome here.
Well, I think I still have stuff that, you know, at least some ideas to contribute to what's happening around here. I always thought that one of my strong points was to unpack a problem and put it back together again and figure out how to solve it. And this seems to be a problem in this country today, certainly in the city of Chicago, where people are dying in record numbers from the early 1990s. That's simply unacceptable. Every action has a reaction. And this is where we find ourselves today, and I think it's appropriate that I stay involved.
Well, as I said, you're always welcome here, and I echo what you've said throughout this conversation, because we live in a world now where everybody wants to tell you how pissed off they are, but nobody wants to offer a solution or buy into solutions offered by others. They just want to complain.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, nice talking to you. Hold on a second. It's 727. Steve Cochran Show continues next. We'll get the big story on 720 WGN.